Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are, and should be, proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. First, we're going to meet Air Force Colonel Kim Casey Campbell. She's a retired A-10 pilot. Then Marines Gil and Skip will discuss the southern border in a book, and of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. Retired Air Force Colonel Kim Casey Campbell graduated from the Air Force Academy, flew combat aircraft. She was decorated for piloting her A-10 Thunderbolt II back to a base in southern Iraq after taking heavy anti-aircraft artillery damage in aerial combat over Baghdad during Operation Iraqi Freedom in 2003. Other than that, I guess her life's been pretty boring. I think not. Welcome to the show, Casey. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Kim, your story about getting into the Air Force Academy is interesting. Will you start by telling us why you wanted to go to the Air Force Academy and what it was like?
Yeah, absolutely. I decided when I was 10 years old that I wanted to be an astronaut. And I figured the best way to get there was to go to the Air Force Academy and become a fighter pilot. My dad had been in the Air Force, so he shared that with me, that many of those astronauts were pilots. Many have come to the Academy. And so that I decided right then, that's what I wanted to do. I was going to the Academy. I was going to be a fighter pilot. Keep in mind, this was 1986. Women weren't actually allowed to be fighter pilots. But my dad never told me that. He just told me to work hard, go after what I wanted. And that was it. I was committed. I had changed my path and life at 10 years old.
You know, it's sort of neat when that sort of things happen. And getting into the Air Force Academy wasn't, you didn't do that in a what is called a typical normal way, did you?
No, I wouldn't call it typical, that's for sure. I did all the things that I think most high school students do when they, you know, they want to get into a good school, and I worked hard in all of my academics. I had a 4.0. I did well in sports and school activities and well-rounded, but I struggled a little bit with a standardized test, specifically the SAT. And, I still thought that everything else would take care of that, but I waited for that long-awaited letter from the Air Force Academy, waiting for the letter of acceptance. And instead, one day I opened the mailbox, opened the letter up, and it said, thank you for your interest, but you're essentially not competitive enough. It's a very competitive process, and please try again next year. It was a total rejection from the Academy, the only thing that I wanted. And I had worked so hard to get in. And then there was this stunning rejection, which hurt. You know, it was kind of a moment in my life where I really could have gone two ways. You know, I could have quit on that goal. Instead, I decided to write a letter to the Air Force Academy every week, letting them know that I was still interested. If a space opened up, I would happily take it. I told them if I had done something better in school, got, you know, a different score on a test. I specifically ended up taking the ACT and did much better there, and eventually got my acceptance just a few weeks before basic training was to start.
Well, there's nothing like doing it that way. That's my story. Getting into West Point was a little bit like yours, but yours is a lot more interesting than mine. But I finally got into. Okay. So you graduated from the Academy. Not everybody who graduates gets to be a pilot. Apparently you did. What was your time in the Air Force like?
Well, you know, that little bit of rejection early on in my life, I think, helped me in many ways, because I realized that I wasn't just going to survive at the Academy. I wanted to do well. I wanted to excel there. I ended up graduating number one in the Military Order of Merit and at the top of my class, which allowed me then to go on to become a pilot, to go to pilot training. And I spent 24 years as an A-10 pilot flying the mighty A-10 Warthog, which was absolutely a defining, really purpose and passion of my life, to support our troops on the ground. I truly enjoyed the opportunity, you know, to support them both in training and in combat, and really lucky also to be able to command at the squadron and group level. So squadron was about 150 people, and then my group was about 1,000 people. But just an incredible opportunity to take care of people, to lead teams, and really some incredible experiences throughout my 24 years in the Air Force.
Well, as a guy who spent 22 years in the infantry, 2 years in Vietnam, to say that I appreciate people who fly combat support for us on grunts on the ground is a gross understatement. So while I was out of the Army before you got in the Air Force, I am a great admirer. I was never unhappy to see you guys show up, but that's an understatement.
Well, I think we have a special bond between, I think, A-10 pilots specifically and ground troops, because we spent a lot of time learning about specifically Army scheme of maneuver and just understanding kind of what, you know, working together to understand what ground troops are going through. And I just think there is a special bond, and to be able to meet many of those ground troops, especially in Afghanistan, because we were in Bagram Air Base at times together. Just, I think there is something to be said about that bond that's shared between A-10 pilots and ground troops. And I think it's probably the same with many air-to-ground platforms, because that's our job. You know, that's our primary purpose, is to support troops on the ground.
Well, for A-10s particularly, because that's really the primary purpose of that machine, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the primary purpose of the A-10 is close air support, supporting our troops on the ground. Was built around a 19-foot long 30-millimeter Gatling gun, which is our primary weapon, especially when we're in close proximity to ground troops. So just a very reliable, durable airplane to provide that close air support.
And I've seen lately indications that, well, the last couple of years, the Air Force been talking about they're going to discontinue it, but somehow they never discontinue it. It's still around, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We'll see. I think we're probably closer than we've ever been to retiring the A-10, which is sad to me. I mean, I love the airplane. I'm totally biased, of course, but you know, I think it's done exceptionally well at its job of providing that close air support. But I think we're getting a little bit closer to the ultimate retirement of the A-10, sadly.
Well, obviously, they're going to come up with something that does the job and does it a bit better. But, well, I never had an A-10 in support of me. I've watched a lot of news and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it will be a sad day, but it'll happen. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom, with talking with Colonel Casey Campbell. Casey, you and I met when you did a presentation to some high school students about leadership and, more than that, life planning. Can you take a minute and sort of introduce that? We'll talk about that a little bit more in the second segment.
Yeah, I think, you know, I really enjoy the opportunity to speak to our next generation of aviators and leaders, and really get them thinking about what it is that they want to do in life. And that if there's something that they want, they need to work hard and go after it. Things don't come easy. They don't come without work and dedication. I really think it's important that we talk to our young generation about, you know, picking something that they'd love to do and then putting in the work to make it happen.
Indeed. Life is going to have some bad times in it. And if you're smart, you make the most of that and grow through it and are better off because of it. You gave a couple examples already of disappointment, but not abandonment. There's always something good out there, but it won't land in your lap if you aren't hunting and working for it, right?
Absolutely. And I think the idea that, you know, you're going to make mistakes and failures and have failures in your life. And how do you respond? Can you get back up again? You know, when you make that mistake, people are watching to see how you respond. You know, do you quit or do you get back up? You dust yourself off and you kind of get back into the fight. I think that's what people are looking for. They're looking for that resilience. And I think it's important to know that on this path and journey, whatever, wherever it leads you, it requires hard work, it requires dedication, and it requires resilience.
Well, it does. And I've run a couple of companies since I retired from the Army. I've since retired from them too. But that's the kind of thing I was looking for in the people I was hiring. Can you handle a tough situation? Can you handle that stuff and still go on? And as you know, in combat, you can't say, ooh, that happened bad, so I guess we'll quit. That doesn't happen. So yeah, it works in the military. It works in life. It's all the attitude that you come in with, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a constant reminder. I mean, I talk to my kids about it, who are 11 and 15. I remind myself of it on a daily basis, because I think it's something that's applicable to young people, to business leaders, you name it. I think we all need to learn how to overcome mistakes, how to respond when things don't go as planned, and how to have that resilience and courage to do hard things in our life.
Well said. There's more to discuss about her story, and Casey's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to do some knee bends. Go halfway down, do about 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. Casey and I will be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
The Iraq War is more than 20 years old and troops are still on the ground in Iraq. But why?
For too long, lawmakers have sent American troops to Iraq and beyond in support of vague missions that don't tie to a vital national interest.
At Concerned Veterans for America, we're translating our unique experiences as veterans to call for a better foreign policy that makes Americans safer and more prosperous.
Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Air Force Colonel Kim Casey Campbell. Casey, here's the big question. I don't understand the Air Force culture a lot, but I know that you don't pick your nickname or call sign or whatever it is. Your peers do it for you. Talk to us about how that happens in the Air Force and how you ended up as KC.
That's always a good story. So a call sign for fighter pilots is really a rite of passage. You don't get a call sign, an official call sign, until you're deemed combat mission ready, which means you've gone through all of your training and the squadron has decided that if they deploy, you are qualified and ready to go with them. And then all of the new pilots who are deemed combat mission ready, we gather with the entire squadron, usually in the bar on a Friday night. There's a general location for this to happen. And we tell stories. We tell stories about pilots. A lot of times they're funny stories of maybe mistakes that you've made in the cockpit, or just stories about like a play on your name or a call sign from a perspective of your personality. You know, think like in Top Gun, we've got Maverick and Goose. So those are some examples. But in our world, we'll tell the stories. You're not in the room when they tell the stories about you. And I remember for me, walking back into that room, waiting for my call sign to be declared. And I remember walking back in and everybody's cheering, you know, it's a big event. And they said, well, your call sign is now KC. And I was like, well, that's kind of lame because that's my initials. I did not say that out loud. but I was like, you know, that's not really all that unique is what I'm thinking. And then they went on to explain, yes, it's your initials, but it actually stands for killer chick. And then I was like, okay, well, that's a call sign I can live with for sure. I was the only female fighter pilot in the squadron. And so it seemed fitting as an A-10 pilot to have the call sign killer chick.
And that is a great story. And it also makes sense. You mentioned that, you know, you were the only female pilot. Were you treated appropriately as a female?
You know, it's interesting. I knew I was going to be the only female pilot in the squadron going in on day one. And I will tell you, I put a ton of pressure on myself because I felt like, you know, if I made a mistake or if I failed in some way, that I would ruin it for women that followed me. And that's just a ton of pressure, but that's pressure that I put on myself. You know, the reality is that the guys in my squadron really just wanted me to be able to perform in the airplane just like everyone else. I think any new pilot in a squadron is going to be judged. They're going to be looked at to see if they can perform. And I think once I prove myself in the airplane, like, it really didn't matter. I mean, the jet does not know the difference. And it turns out really the guys in my squadron, you know, they didn't care about the difference either. It was just about, can you perform in the airplane? And whether it was beneficial or not, I suppose I proved myself very early in my career in combat. And, you know, after that, it was just, it really wasn't an issue. It wasn't a question. It was all about just being able to perform in the airplane. And I tell everyone, you know, go be good at what you do, be credible, be capable. And that's half the battle.
And, you know, I'm glad to hear that you were treated well. That is how life should be. And that's how our military should be. Everybody hears the stories of, no, I wasn't, but I'm glad to hear that that's not the case.
Yeah. And I, you know, I know that there are other stories out there, but I will tell you from my perspective, the guys in my squadron were like my brothers. I knew many of them from my time at the Air Force Academy, but they, you know, they looked after me in many ways. They, you know, respected me for my role and my position and my credibility in the airplane. And they really were like my brothers. And we are still friends to this day, that first fighter squadron. I've got a lot of special memories and special connections and a really strong sense of camaraderie from that unit.
Well, that should be the case. The guys should feel that way towards each other too, shouldn't they?
Absolutely.
I mean, would you want to be in a squadron or any kind of a combat unit that people didn't feel that way?
Well, absolutely. You wouldn't want to be in any business, in any team, any organization, right? You want to be respected for what you do. And it's all about treating people with respect and common decency. But it's also about like putting in the work, right? This goes back to the earlier point of you got to put in the work and be good at what you do. And I think, you know, that's a huge piece of this.
You know, two of the quotes that I remember the last time I heard you speak that I remembered and wrote down, you said, if you want something, put in the work. It's not going to come on its own.
Yeah.
You've already talked a bit about that, but that really is an important point, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And I think sometimes we prefer when things come easy. But the reality is we learn the most. We probably strengthen ourselves the most when things are hard. And, you know, when you face those challenges, you face those mistakes. I think some of those, when I look back on my career and my life, those are some of the moments where I learned the most about myself and I grew the most as a pilot, as a leader in those tough moments. But you got to be willing to put in the work.
You know, and I guess that counts in your marriage and your family too, right?
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's true with everything. As a parent of two, I will call them young kids. I've got a teenager now, you know, you put in the work, you know, you got to put in the work and time and effort and to be a good parent, to be a good spouse. I think it goes with anything in life.
I agree totally. And the second quote was, I think I got this right. Sometimes things don't work out as planned. Sometimes you hear the word no.
Yeah, that goes back to my early days at the my initial rejection at the academy. You know, I had this really solid plan, or so I thought, about going to the academy. And I, you know, it was everything that I had worked for. My parents, thankfully, did make me apply to some alternate schools. But, you know, sometimes you can do all the work. You put everything in, you put all the effort in, and sometimes you still hear the word no, which is disappointing. And it's, you know, there's that moment of like, yep, you can feel sorry for yourself and you can feel bad about it. And I think that's okay. And then you get back up again. You dust yourself off and you go, okay, what do I do now? What's the next step? And you keep after it. And I think that, you know, that's going to happen in life. It's going to happen as for young people, it's going to happen later in our life as well. And it's just an important reminder. Sometimes you will hear that word no. And what do you do with it then?
And that's a good introduction. We've got a couple of minutes left. Would you take a minute or two and sort of sum up your thoughts? What would you like our listeners to take away from our conversation today?
Well, I think the reality is that, you know, we are going to face hard times in our life. There are going to be challenges. There's going to be things that don't go as planned. And it is all about how do you respond in those moments? I talk a lot about leading with courage. And I think courage is about doing hard things. It's about, you know, making tough decisions when you don't have perfect information. It's about overcoming mistakes and obstacles. And I think that's really the important thing. Things don't always go as planned, but how do you respond? How do you act? How can you stand up again? How can you take action in the face of fear, in the face of mistakes and challenges? You know, that's the important thing. How do you respond in those moments?
Well, I agree with you because ain't nobody perfect. My wife and I kid each other that it'd be really, really hard being married to a perfect person. So we've agreed to be imperfect to each other. And we're both really good at doing that. But that happens in life. I mean, and it's going to, and it's not just once or twice. It's going to happen more often than that. And you got to recover and go on and succeed at whatever you're doing. So I agree. Kim, how can listeners stay in touch with you? You've got a lot to share.
Yeah. Well, there's a few options. One is, you know, certainly a lot of what we talked about in small segments is also in my book, which is called Flying in the Face of Fear, A Fighter Pilot's Lessons on Leading with Courage. And I go into a lot deeper on a lot of the things that we talked about. They can also reach out to me on my website, which is kim-kc-campbell.com. That has links to all the social media. And if there's anything that we didn't talk about that maybe you have a question, I'd be happy for you to reach out on social media as well. LinkedIn, X, Instagram, Facebook, it's all out there. You'll find me at Kim KC Campbell or KCHAWG987.
One more time, what's the title of your book and how can people buy one?
The title of the book is Flying in the Face of Fear, A Fighter Pilot's Lessons on Leading with Courage. It is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any of your favorite booksellers can order the book as well.
Thank you. Thank you for your time with us today, Casey. Thank you for your service to our nation. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, co-host Gil and Skip will present The Southern Border and a book that will open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you're giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
HealthVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HealthVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HealthVet.net. Visit HealthVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And now it's time for the Marine B&B. Marine Vet Gil Mazza, retired Border Patrolman, will discuss our nation's southern border. Welcome, Gil.
Thanks, sir.
And Marine Vet and author Skip Coriel will discuss an interesting book. I don't know how to say welcome to somebody who's been on the show so long. Anyway, hi, Skip.
Oh, hey, I am here. I'm like gravity. I never stop.
But not necessarily welcome, though, but it's okay.
That's true. Okay, Gil, you're up. Given millions of unknown that have crossed our border and are still crossing it, and our president is now going to slow that down, he says?
The good news is, Colonel, is that it's day six of the, quote, momentous Biden border executive order to shut down the border. Yeah, I just wrote that. Just 147 days out from the presidential elections. So how's that going so far? Well, based on all the loopholes that they included in this executive order, far from stopping or even slowing down the process, it is actually accomplishing the job of allowing for even more illegals to be flooded into the U.S. than ever before.
You know, that's consistent then. I can't understand even one reason why it's good for America and American citizens to have all these illegals. But whatever the reason for doing it, of course, you would want to make it more effective, do it more, wouldn't you?
Well, of course, you got to realize that Mayorkas' intention is not to stop the flow of illegals coming into this country, but to facilitate as much as possible through what he calls all our legal pathways. The only problem is, Colonel, that every pathway, legal and illegal, is a legal pathway for this administration.
But don't we have laws prescribing how you can come in as a legal visitor, a legal person who wants to stay here? Don't we have laws?
You're not talking about those pesky immigration laws that we've put in place from the beginning of this country, right? That is supposed to control and allow us to understand and know who's coming in, when, and for what reason. Come on, Colonel, it's time to get into the reality of things, right? The big push is, and look at what's going on right now across the country. More of our citizens getting raped, killed, robbed daily. Just today, a Guatemalan illegal alien who was a supposed gotaway by this administration, just got arrested and charged with raping a child in Massachusetts. And it's like, how many American citizens, men, women, and children, need to be hurt or killed for this administration just to turn around and say, okay, enough is enough. Let's see if we can't just stop things for now and control what we have. But they don't have a magic number as to what is that number that's going to say to them, enough is enough.
Well, and how about the number of kids that are suddenly in our different schools that don't speak the language, or people going to emergency rooms for treatment that keeps the rest of us out? There's a whole lot more to this than just numbers of people that are here.
Correct. Because every single institution in the United States now has been irrevocably or just completely changed forever based on illegal immigration. You know, even now, only 25% of the 4+ million American jobs since 2019 has gone to American citizens. 971,000 American U.S. are employed, but 3.2 million more illegal immigrants are employed. So, you know, it's more like a replacement, you know, I guess, conspiracy theory than anything else that is actually a reality.
Okay. But other than that, oh, we're supposed to be a nation of law. So therefore, shouldn't somebody be charged if they break our immigration laws?
You know, what would really be great, Colonel, is if we came up with an elite force of law enforcement officers that are designated, trained to protect our borders and to actually, you know, secure our country. And we could call it the United States Border Patrol, and we can put them out on the border, and they would be able to intercept 99% of what's coming in, and we would know who's coming in and who shouldn't be here and who, you know, we would know all those things. But unfortunately, we seem to be lacking an agency that could do that for us right now.
Yeah, we had one for a while, but they went away somewhere a couple of years ago, didn't they?
Yes, yes. And unfortunately, right now, because of this administration's complete open border policies and a secretary of DHS who has the instincts in law enforcement of I don't even know what to say. I would not put this man in charge of an outhouse security, much less the security of every man, woman, and child of this nation, who seems to believe that somehow you can secure America by doing a little bit of enforcement inside, but leaving all the doors outside the house completely wide open.
Gosh, Gil, what can I say? You hit the nail on the head. You didn't miss a one. That's awesome. This is Colonel Denny Gill on Frontlines of Freedom. We're doing the Marine B&B with Gil and Skip. Okay, Skip, you're in. The book is
titled We Were Soldiers Once and Young, Nguyen Trang, The Battle That Changed the War in Vietnam. Colonel, I just love this book. And I know you probably already know about this because this is history. And you were over there making history, you know, alongside the author of this book, you know, while he was making history. The author's name is Harold Moore. Everyone called him Hal.
No, they didn't. They called him Sir.
Well, yes, yes. Yes, they did. Especially after what he did. I mean, this guy, people probably know about this from the Mel Gibson movie. Yes. Okay. And the Mel Gibson movie, I mean, I loved it. It was awesome. You know, I've probably seen it 7-8 times. Okay. It's one of my go-to movies, but I never read the book. When I read the book, it's like, you remember Paul Harvey, and he said, and now, you know, the rest of the story.
Yes.
You want to know the rest of the story, read this book, Colonel, because it fills in all of the blanks, all of the details. I have never read a nonfiction book on a battle like this before. I mean, this guy remembered what people were wearing, you know, how they looked, the look on their face. It was just awesome. It's not like you were there, but it was very graphic. And some of the major themes that I really came out of this was, you know, so it was back in 1965, November, 450 men of the 1st Battalion, 7th Cavalry, under the command of Lieutenant Colonel Hal Moore, they were dropped by helicopter into a small clearing in the Nguyen Trang Valley. They were immediately surrounded by 2,000 North Vietnamese soldiers. These were regular NVA. 3 days later, and only 2.5 miles away, a sister battalion was chopped to pieces. Together, these actions at the landing zones X-ray in Albany constituted one of the most savage and significant battles of the Vietnam War. It was just one heroic act after another. But boy, Colonel Moore, he impressed me for a lot of different reasons. He was just an incredible leader, very good at leading. He was, you know, you've heard the phrase, you can't lead from behind. He was always out front. And I also liked Sergeant Major Plumley, his head non-com, right?
Yes. But
one of Sergeant Major Plumley's jobs was to keep the colonel from getting shot. Okay. And, you know, that's a good job, don't you think, Colonel?
I'd appreciate it if somebody did it for me. And yes.
Yes. Well, you know, there were a lot of times where the sergeant major had to say,
The colonel needs to get down now. You make a good target, Colonel. And but he treated his non-coms really well. And as a former Marine Corps non-com, I can appreciate that. But, you know, the whole thing, this is where the concept of air mobile was basically put in place for the first time in actual combat. And, you know, it was interesting to know that the NVA, they really didn't know how to fight Americans. So their goal was to just fight the Americans and find out how to fight Americans. And Colonel Moore's job was, you know, basically they said, go out, find the enemy and engage him. And both NVA and Americans achieved their goals. I mean, we found the enemy and they figured out how to fight us, but it was just an awesome, awesome book. I highly recommend it to everybody, Colonel. You won't be able to put the book down once you start. It's really
indeed
good.
We were soldiers once and we're young. Thank you, Skip, for putting up with all the junk that we're going through. And thank you, Gil, for joining the Frontlines of Freedom team and for your service to our nation.
Thank you, Colonel.
Skip, you're back on in a minute. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for Weekly Mailbag, then it's Military History Time. You reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 64 this time? I want your Ranger ready. Then stand at ease. Silver has increased 24% over the past 15 months and is a solid financial investment. Silver is projected to continue its rise and is nowhere near its 2011 high of $49 an ounce. So there's still a lot of room for investment growth. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. I do some coin collecting. Universal Coin was the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase silver and gold. I encourage you to go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel, Gerald, the son of a Vietnam vet, really enjoyed hearing about your time in combat there.
Gerald, we had a lot of good men who fought well over there who weren't welcomed at all when they came home. Thank you.
And Jennifer, a member of the Army Reserves and a college student, is curious what good Mr. Biden's new rules for the southern border will actually do.
Jennifer, they'll do no good. Mr. Biden brought in millions of illegals, at least some of whom are criminals or terrorists, and that does no good at all for our nation. Okay, now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 17 June 1775, British General William Howe landed his troops on the Charlestown Peninsula overlooking Boston, Massachusetts, and led them against Breed's Hill, a fortified American position just below Bunker Hill. As the British advanced in columns, American General William Prescott reportedly told his men, "Don't one of you fire until you see the whites of their eyes." When the Redcoats were within 40 yards, the Americans let loose with a lethal barrage of musket fire, throwing the British into retreat. Howe attacked again with much the same result. Prescott's men were now low on ammunition, and during their third assault, they engaged the Americans in hand-to-hand combat. The outnumbered Americans were forced to retreat. However, the Patriots' gunfire had killed nearly 1,000 enemy troops, including 92 officers. Of the 370 Patriots who fell, most were struck while in retreat.
That was a famous battle. And on the 20 June 1881, 5 years after General George Custer's infamous defeat at the Battle of the Little Bighorn, Sioux leader Sitting Bull surrendered to the U.S. Army, which promised amnesty. Sitting Bull had been a major leader in the 1876 Sioux uprising that resulted in the death of Custer and his men at the Little Bighorn. Pursued by the army, he escaped to Canada. Sitting Bull gained early reputation in his Sioux tribe as a capable warrior and a man of vision. In 1864, he fought against our army and dedicated himself to leading Sioux resistance against white encroachment. He became a leader of the tribe and of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes. In 1867, he was made principal chief of the entire Sioux Nation. After the Little Bighorn, he fled to Canada, but in 1881, with his people starving, he returned to the U.S. and surrendered. He was held prisoner for 2 years and then was permitted to live at Standing Rock Reservation in the Dakota Territory. In 1885, he traveled for a season with Buffalo Bill Cody's Wild West show and then returned to Standing Rock. In 1889, the spiritual proclamation of Sitting Bull influenced the rise of the Ghost Dance, an Indian religious movement that said the whites would disappear and the dead Indians and buffalo would return. This was not appreciated by government officials, and on December 15, 1890, the Indian police burst into his house to arrest him. It's not clear what happened then. Some say Sitting Bull's warriors shot the police leader, who immediately gunned down Sitting Bull. In another account, the police were instructed by the director of the Standing Rock Sioux Agency to kill the chief at any sign of resistance. Either way, Sitting Bull was shot and died within hours. The Indian police hastily buried his body within Standing Rock Reservation. In 1953, his remains were moved to Mulbridge, South Dakota, where a granite shaft marks his resting place.
And on 20 June 1898, during the Spanish-American War, on the way to the Philippines to fight the Spanish, the U.S. Navy cruiser Charleston seized the island of Guam.
That must have been an easy one, if it was just en route. On 19 June 1944, during World War II, in what would become known as the Marianas Turkey Shoot, U.S. carrier-based fighters decimated the Japanese fleet with only a minimum losses in the Battle of the Philippine Sea. The security of the Marianas Islands in the Western Pacific was vital to Japan, which had air bases on Saipan, Tinan, and Guam. Our troops were already attacking Saipan. Any further intrusion would make the Philippines and Japan itself vulnerable to attack. Our 5th Fleet, commanded by Admiral Raymond Pruens, was on its way west from the Marshall Islands as a backup for the invasion of the Marianas. But Japanese Admiral Jusaburo decided to challenge our fleet, ordering 430 of his planes, launched from aircraft carriers, to attack. In what became the greatest carrier battle of the war, our Navy, having already picked up the Japanese aircraft on radar, shot down over 300 aircraft and sank 2 Japanese aircraft carriers, losing only 29 planes. It was described in the aftermath as a turkey shoot. Admiral Ozawa, believing his missing planes had landed at their Guam airbase, stayed in the area, allowing a second attack of our fighters to shoot down 65 more Japanese planes and sink another carrier. The Japanese lost 480 aircraft and their crews, and we now controlled the Marianas.
Ooh, I'd call that decisive.
Yep.
And on 21 June 1966, U.S. planes struck North Vietnamese petroleum storage facilities in a series of devastating raids. This was part of Operation Rolling Thunder, which had been launched in March 1965 after President Lyndon Johnson ordered a sustained bombing campaign of North Vietnam. It was designed to interdict North Vietnamese transportation routes in the southern part of North Vietnam and to slow infiltration of personnel and supplies into South Vietnam. In 1966, Rolling Thunder was expanded to include the bombing of North Vietnamese ammunition dumps and oil storage facilities. In the spring of 1967, it was further expanded to include power plants, factories, and airfields in the Hanoi and Haiphong area. The White House closely controlled Operation Rolling Thunder, and at times, President Johnson personally selected targets. From 1965 to 1968, about 643,000 tons of bombs were dropped on North Vietnam. The operation continued with occasional suspensions until President Johnson ended it on October 31st, 1968, under domestic political pressure.
An interesting operation. And that's military history for today. Now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
At a gas station in Cass County, Michigan, Cornelius Anthony Martin, age 35, went into the store and threatened the clerk with a box cutter. He said, "You know why I'm here." A nearby customer with a six-pack of beer in his left hand drew his legally carried concealed pistol, and fired 7 times, hitting the robber in the face, back, and arm. The robber survived and has been charged with armed robbery. The armed citizen will not be charged with any crime.
Thanks, Colonel. I was able to watch the surveillance video of this robbery, and it was really quite bizarre. I was impressed by several things. First, the customer appeared very calm, and he didn't hesitate to draw his weapon and fire. It's like he'd already pre-decided that if he ever got into this scenario, he would intervene. I talk about this in my classes a lot. All of us need to pre-decide when we're willing to use deadly force, primarily because in the heat of stress and deadly force, you won't have the time or the mental clarity to make that moral decision. Second, he positioned himself behind concealment to make it more difficult for the robber to see him. The concealment also acted as a physical barrier between himself and the edged weapon, which is always a good idea when dealing with knives and other proximity-based weapons. Third, he shot multiple times until the threat stopped. Once the robber went down and was no longer a threat, then he stopped shooting and held the robber at gunpoint until police arrived. I have nothing but praise for this armed citizen. However, I would suggest to him that next time this happens, he should take a moment to put the six-pack of beer down so that he can make better shots. Two-handed shots taken from a solid stance are almost always more accurate and effective. If he'd done that, I have no doubt the robber wouldn't have been charged with a crime because he wouldn't have survived the fight. Despite that, all's well that ends well, and Front Lines of Freedom salutes this Cass County man for his decisive action in saving the clerk from possible death or serious injury.
Amen, brother. Our movie of the month is The Elevator. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog, and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments on the movie. Send your comments to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, Israeli Yuri Goldflam will discuss the situation in Israel. Then former Border Patrol Chief Tom Homan will share about our southern border, and General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And it's now available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com, and check out what they offer you.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the Front Lines of Freedom. Dismissed.